So while it's loading, I'll start. I have three goals today. One is to tell you about the study that we're conducting. It's a large prospective longitudinal study, and it's still in its recruitment phase. I also want to tell you what we've learned in the process of trying to carry out this study about access to second trimester abortion services. And then finally, I want to share some stories that women have shared with us about their reasons for having an abortion and their experience of having either receiving or being denied a second trimester abortion. Sorry, one second. We're slowly getting the word out about this study, and we're trying to generate a cult following. My co-authors and I are hitting all the major meetings, and we're giving out a few stories at each meeting, and you too can collect all 2,000. So this is a quote you probably have seen many times before of Anthony Kennedy's majority decision for the partial birth abortion ban, that while we find no reliable data to measure the phenomenon, it seems unexceptionable to conclude some women come to regret their choice to abort the infant life they once created and sustained. Severe depression and loss of self-esteem can follow. And what is definitely true about that statement is that there are no reliable data. So we created this study before that partial birth abortion and decision, although we got funded after it. I think that's probably not unrelated. Our goal is to describe the mental health, physical health, and socioeconomic outcomes of receiving an abortion compared to carrying an unwanted pregnancy to term. If you're going to restrict access to legal abortion, who it affects is the people who wanted an abortion, and there are women across the country who want an abortion and can't get them, and this is exactly the comparison group we want. This study will help us understand the effect of access to abortion services on women's lives and address what is a recent spate of very low-quality, politically-minded, motivated research. So the Turnaway study, our goal is to recruit 2,000 women at first and second trimester abortion provider sites across the country and where nobody else goes later, has a later gestation. So if you're turned away from that clinic, you have few alternatives nearby, within 150 miles. We're comparing two groups of women, women who were within the gestational limit of the clinic and received the abortion, women who were 2 weeks over the gestational limit of the clinic and were denied an abortion. And so the difference between these two groups is just a matter of a few weeks of gestation, but their life trajectory can be radically different. And we're following all women for 5 years using semi-annual telephone interviews. I'm not going to read all of these. And you'll hear from the stories that we're actually collecting many of these data for each woman every 6 months. But we're looking at physical health conditions that we think are linked to either pregnancy, childbirth, or poverty, or stress. Mental health, because it's all the rage, is to talk about the mental health consequences of abortion. And so we have a huge number of clinically validated scales for mental health. But we're also looking at emotional responses that may not be clinically over a level of depression, but are either positive and negative emotions about the abortion, about not getting the abortion, about their life. We're collecting their reproductive history, socioeconomic outcomes to see how those change over time, their attitudes about abortion and how they came to seek an abortion, whether they were confronted with any anti-choice demonstrators. We're looking at child rearing through a validated scale of maternal bonding and who's caring for the children, both the ones they had before this pregnancy and the ones that they either had because of the pregnancy or subsequent wanted or unwanted pregnancies, and child health and development. And while we've been carrying out this tremendously huge, ambitious study, I didn't say we were finished with it or successful yet, but we've picked up many themes about why women seek an abortion. So although Larry Finer and I have both done work about why women seek an abortion and why they delay, it's nice to hear when women tell a narrative about their own experiences that these themes also come up. And these are consistent with Larry's national study. that timing, that it wasn't the right time, that there were financial considerations. Very common is mentioning their need to take care of other children, and somehow they always mention that their youngest child's in diapers. That's a big deal. So the anti-abortion people should work on potty training, because then people would want to have another one. bad relationship with partner, conflict with their educational plans and health concerns, those are the major ones. I'm presenting the themes here, but you'll hear them when I tell you the stories of women. There are reasons for delay. Money comes up first. Didn't realize I was pregnant is what we have found in our previous research. It explains more than half the difference between first trimester and second trimester's gestation is not realizing you're pregnant. That comes up here. Difficulty deciding, various insurance issues, transportation, and going to another clinic first. In conducting this study, we now have 25 sites, and so this isn't in the publicly available, you'll only see it here, our map, but we've drawn a circle around each of our recruitment sites, and it shows what gestation, roughly what gestational limit, and these are all the latest abortion providers. So if you live in one of those red circles, there's nobody who goes past 14 weeks. And obviously, you see most of the map is gray because we don't have full coverage of the entire United States. But I mean, we know that all of South Dakota would, be red. So it's, a lot of the gray area there's not access either. But we just have these little windows around our recruitment sites to know that what the latest gestational limit is available there. And among the women in the study, they travel an average of 74 miles. To access second trimester procedures. And remember, these are all people who did at least make it to a second trimester abortion provider. So there are people who live farther away who never will show up in these averages because they didn't make it. and we, this concept of a study of getting women to participate who showed up too late for an abortion, who were beyond the gestational limit of the clinic. In conducting this study, we realized this is a pretty big phenomenon. In a small-ish hospital-based clinic that specializes in second trimester provider, we went through all of the counts of people who showed up and how many were beyond, and 4% of the women who present for second trimester abortion were actually beyond the 23-week gestational limit there. And at another provider site, which actually receives all of Sarah Palin's constituents, they turn 170 women away. It's not in Alaska, though. But Alaska actually pays people to fly to a nearby, near the closest clinic, and apparently just paying for them the procedure and the flight is not enough because many women are showing up too late. Across all of our sites, we're currently not recruiting minors, women under 18 years of age. So among, if you just count the adults, adult women who showed up within 2 weeks over the gestational limit, across our 25 sites, every month there's an average of 1 to 2 adult women. And I would, as soon as we are allowed to get teens, it'll be quite clear that there are a lot more teens than adults. So here are 4 women's stories that I'm going to read to you. What I'm going to read to you are summaries that we actually write for each other. These were not initially intended to be shared in this way, although you can start collecting them for your 2000. And these actually were written by Emily Hendrick, who's sitting over there, who conducted these interviews, who can wave. After we finish an interview, we write up what the major themes were that the women expressed, so that if someone else has to take the interview next time, they're not starting pretending like they don't know anything about the person. And also, we've found that these are just super fascinating. I hope that you'll find that too. So my first is a 21-year-old Latina woman who was 18 weeks and turned away because she was farther than the Southern Texas site where she was recruited. She's living with her three children in an apartment and attending community college full-time. She's pursuing a teaching certificate in secondary education. She also works full-time as a cashier in a bakery. She's supposed to receive $500 in child support each month, but hasn't received any child support in the last month. Her personal and family income is $1,300 a month for herself and three children. She says that she doesn't qualify for Medicaid for herself or her children, but cannot afford, cannot afford health insurance on her own because her work doesn't offer it. She's separated from her husband, who is the man she became pregnant with. He was living with her sometimes when she became pregnant. She was on birth control pills when she became pregnant, but said she'd missed some pills. The father of the pregnancy didn't know about the pregnancy when she was deciding to have the abortion, but he knows about it now. She spoke about financial reasons, her three other children, timing, and the fact that she's in the process of getting a divorce as some of the reasons she decided to have an abortion. I can't afford it even if I wanted to. I have four children on my own. I would have four children on my own. She says she was most delayed getting to the abortion clinic because of money. She said it took me 2 months to save up for an ultrasound. She also didn't realize she was as far along as she was. When I asked her if she considered getting an abortion somewhere else, she told me, I'm not sure because I'm farther along and I worry about complications. It's more complicated after 15 weeks. I have three children to think about. She also spoke about other barriers in getting an abortion elsewhere. It's a three-day procedure, which means 3 days in a hotel and 3 days of missed work. She wasn't concerned about the cost of a procedure because she said it would actually be less expensive than the procedure she was planning to have, because an organization at the clinic pays for 85% of the procedure costs. It was more about travel costs, travel time, and considering her children that she expressed concern. She said she'd actually made an appointment with the other clinic, but had to cancel it because she'd have to drive 6 hours just for counseling, 12 hours round trip, because they have to do the counseling in person. This is part of Texas state restrictions. When I asked her if she was still trying to access abortion services, she struggled over the answer but finally told me to write down yes. She shared that her main emotion about the pregnancy and also the fact that she was turned away was guilt. When I asked her how life will be different in 5 years, she told me, easier, regardless of the children, I'll have a job with benefits and won't have to make these decisions due to lack of money. The next one was also denied an abortion. She's a 29-year-old Native American woman living with her grandfather, who she cares for, and two of her three children. She's currently unemployed and taking GED classes, and she hopes to obtain her GED this month. She's receiving cash aid and food stamps from the government, and her family income is $415 a month. She says she never has enough money for her basic living needs. She says she had severe depression 5 years ago and currently has anxiety or obsessive compulsive disorder. She isn't sure which. She found out about her pregnancy in June or July. This interview was done in September. And decided right away she would have an abortion. She was delayed in getting to the clinic because her insurance ran out on her car and she couldn't transport herself there. She said she arrived at the clinic just 2 days over the limit and still feels angry about both the pregnancy and being turned away. She wishes she could have had the abortion. She says she'll probably raise the baby when it's born. The man she became pregnant with wanted her to have the baby. Some of her reasons for seeking the abortion was because her boyfriend at the time was cheating on her, so she didn't want to be with him anymore, and because she was already raising children on her own on welfare and she could barely take care of the children she already had. And she said she used to be a drug addict for 3 years, so it's just getting her life together and wants to be able to have a life for herself and go back to school. She did view the ultrasound, which she said freaked her out a little bit and made her feel angry at herself and think, how could this happen? She currently smokes 3 to 4 packs a week and has had one occasion of drinking more than 5 drinks in the last month. She says she doesn't think much about the future and tries to take things day by day. We did randomly pick these, although they were interesting. Three of them just happened in the last week, last 2 weeks before this meeting. I tried to pick them for gestation and age and race, ethnicity, and geography. So they are, every single one of these is interesting. We didn't just pick the particularly interesting ones. Here's another person in Texas, a teenager who had the abortion at 14 weeks. She lives with her one-year-old daughter in a house and is attending college full-time. She's pursuing a bachelor's and works part-time for an event planner. She receives WIC and has a personal income, household income of $1,500 a month. She says she's been diagnosed with depression and bipolar disorder and is going to start taking medication again now that she's not pregnant. She says she was taking birth control pills and using condoms sometimes when she became pregnant. She found out she was pregnant at 4 weeks gestation and says, "I didn't know what to do. I was confused." She said that she first considered having an abortion when she found out, but then changed her mind. The man she became pregnant with was her boyfriend at the time and is now her ex-boyfriend. She experienced physical abuse and threats from him before the pregnancy and as recently as one day before the interview. She says she was last physically hurt by him a week and a half before the abortion. That's what made me decide, she said. While the poor relationship with the man she became pregnant with was her primary reason for seeking an abortion, she reported other reasons such as, "I wasn't ready to have another baby. I'm still taking care of this one." She also spoke about financial reasons and the fact that she wouldn't have a babysitter for school. She says she was slowed down to coming to the abortion clinic sooner because she'd come previously and they weren't able to do it that day. Also, it's out of town. I had to fly there. She stated that her primary reason was her conscience. She felt bad because she kept the baby she has now and she didn't want to keep the one that she had aborted. She did see anti-abortion protesters at the clinic, and while they didn't try and physically keep her from entering, she said that they tried to convince her not to go in by telling her what a bad place it was. They also commented that they recognized her because she'd come before. She was a little upset by the protesters, but said that they didn't change her decision. Her main emotion about becoming pregnant is confusion, while her main emotion about abortion is relief. She thinks in 1 year she'll have moved to a different town and be attending college. In 5 years, she thinks, "I'll have a career. I may be working full-time." And the last one is shorter, I promise, from a small northern state where a woman received abortion at 13 weeks. She's a 21-year-old white woman. She lives with her mother and is disabled and unable to work. She has arthritis and another chronic pain condition and says her body hurts all the time. She had an ultrasound at 9 weeks and viewed the ultrasound. The doctor wrote, "Hi, Mom," on the ultrasound screen when he showed it to her. She said it made her want to cry, but she acted excited because she knew that that's what everyone wanted her to feel. Deep down, she didn't feel excited because she knew she didn't want to continue the pregnancy. She became pregnant with her boyfriend, who she was living with at the time, but he is now her ex-boyfriend, and they have a very poor relationship. Her reasons for seeking an abortion were financial, because she wasn't ready to be a mother yet, and because she didn't want to deal with her ex-boyfriend at all. She paid none of the costs of the abortion, because the state Medicaid program paid for the ultrasound, and a grant she didn't know the name of paid 75% of the procedure cost. Her sister's ex-husband paid the remaining costs, and her sister paid $25 in gas they needed to get to the clinic and back. Her mother drove her to the clinic, even though she originally discouraged the participant from having the abortion. She feels that the abortion was the right decision for her based on her situation, and her main emotion around the abortion is relief. In 1 year, she hopes to have found someone she wants to marry and be financially secure. In 5 years, she hopes to be married and working on a family. That's it.
So our last paper is going to be by Dr. Kate Cosby, who's a research analyst. Did I do it right?
I'm not a doctor, but thank you.
Oh, that's okay. I get called a doctor all the time, too. We'll just take it. Okay. She's an MPH, so, you know, which is even better, in health policy and management from the University of California at Berkeley. And she first gained experience in the field of abortion and women's health through her work at the Feminist Women's Health Center in Atlanta and the National Abortion Federation in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. So thanks, everybody, for staying this long. And